I wonder if we have any of our members that have called in. So we're back to Avin Walter again for the 1 o'clock public health data standard letter, also submitted for action.
Thank you. Just a couple of points with respect to background of this. So this is very, very special because it's really bringing us as a national committee back to one of our original, back in 60 years ago, goals and mission and purposes of the committee, which was to be the national committee advising on vital and health statistics and in many respects the policies around data and standards in this field. And as a national committee, we have not done in the last probably 12 or so years or more since we took over HIPAA's responsibilities under the HIPAA law in 96. We have not done much about public health standards, and we have done a lot of work outside of the national committee. Of course, there's been a lot of work done in the public health standards arena, starting within the late 90s, the creation of the Public Health Data Standards Consortium, which served really as the voice and the vehicle to connect the public health community with the standards development world that was developing standards for administrative transactions. And so a lot of the public health data was derived from, and we heard it even just today, is being derived from claims and other administrative data exchanges. So back in those years, it made a lot of sense to say to public health, we need to really pay attention to the standards that are happening in this area. Now even more so with respect to the standards that are happening in the electronic health records world, in the entire meaningful use arena and EHR arena. So it was very, very timely and very special, at least for a number of us, to be able to convene a hearing at the end of last year to talk about this, bring all the people that have been working in this space of public health data standards for many years, bring them together to testify on where things are with the standards in public health. And by that, we mean we use different words for public health standards. There's the concepts and, there's different ways of interpreting. And what we were talking about here was really public health informatics standards. And we actually, in the letter, include some references and definitions about it. Basically, the electronic standards used in the messaging between entities that submit data to public health and public health, and bidirectionally. So going to public health and coming out of public health. So the electronic message standard, just like we have claims going from a provider to a payer, and you heard the word CDA this morning from Joy. This is the standard HL7 message for electronic clinical exchange of data going from one provider to another. So we have the claim going from provider to payer, the HO7 message going from provider to provider. What are the messages that we have going from providers to public health and providers and payers to public health and all that? So a lot of that work came to this hearing in November, and really we heard two important messages. One was, there's a lot of work being done and a lot of maturity, actually, in some of the standards being used in public health and data exchanges. You know, we heard about immunization data standards, and we heard about public health laboratory messaging standards and others. And in that area, there is a lot of work to be done in other exchanges of data. For example, the reporting of a public health event, for example, a public health case report, and where there's already some standards developed there, there are a number of opportunities to extend the work in that and in a number of other. Environmental health, for example, was another area. Maternal and child health, a number of things. So that's one set of messages, the standards. But then we heard a significant message about the state and the current state of public health information systems in the country and the challenges that public health information, public health agencies, state, local agencies face in terms of their infrastructure, information infrastructure, as they see how the evolution in the clinical world with the adoption of electronic health records goes, and, you know, trying to keep up and stay at par or close to the developments in the electronic health record side and in the clinical side. So those two were the driving messages that we heard. We, in the letter, decided to take the second one first and really focus our attention on that, and through that really highlight the importance of enhancing and advancing, and we at some point even used the word modernizing the public health information infrastructure and investing really in that. And through that, really helping advance the development of standards in public health, standards as in electronic messaging sent. So that is the focus of this letter. The letter really highlights, I think this is the second pass that we have with the National Committee. The first one, we reviewed it and got feedback at the full committee during the May 15 full committee virtual meeting. So we went through it, we read it basically paragraph by paragraph, and we got some important feedback that we want to communicate here with some changes. But I wanted to give you all that background. So in the letter, we start with our traditional introductory statements, and then the purpose of the letter being to provide observations and recommendations regarding the current state of health informatics standards using public health and population health programs. And then we bring in up front a summary of the recommendation, an overview of our recommendations follow, and then later in the letter, we provide the actual recommendations. So the recommendations, when we presented it back in May, we really maybe were thinking big. And so one of the things that we heard during the hearing was that we should all be pursuing a national health informatics improvement act. Actually, it was referenced in the hearing as we should pursue a health public health information systems or health public health systems improvement act or modernization act. And so we really liked the idea conceptually and presented it in the original draft of the letter. It created a number of reactions because public health systems mean a lot of things to and different things to different people, and it was very clear that it gave the impression that public health systems, as in, you know, state and local systems, but not the technical side or the technology infrastructure side, but the systems themselves, the resources and everything that happens in the state and local, it was needed to be modernized or something like that, and that wasn't the intent. So we modified that and changed it, and with input from Jim Scanlon and the two chairs of the population health, Bruce and Bill, we came up with a change in the language. And so the first recommendation reads, and this is the summary again, this translates down and carries down in the actual recommendation, but it reads basically, and let me, what was I trying to do here? Sorry. It reads, HHS should pursue the development and implementation of a new national public health informatics standard strategic initiative, and so we're replacing the enactment of a Health Statistics Systems Improvement Act to advance and bring to par public health information systems with electronic health record systems. That's just a summary of the actual recommendation down in the letter. The second summary of recommendation was HHS to establish a public health information infrastructure trust fund as a component of the, and this is to be changed to the wording actually here. Actually, this is deleted in the recommendation, so that should have been deleted. So Public Health Information Infrastructure Trust Fund that will serve as a dedicated funding source to enhance the information infrastructure needed to support all public health functions. And then HHS should work with the public health community to establish a national public health informatics standards collaboration initiative to accelerate the adoption and implementation of standards in public health. And then HHS should leverage policy programs and initiatives, including the Affordable Care Act and the EHR Meaningful Use Incentives Program, to align incentives for public health reporting, stimulate vendor engagement in adopting and using public health data standards, ensure public health data requirements are incorporated, and ensure if public health requirements are incorporated in into clinical systems. And then the last one is HHS, in partnership with national public health collaboration organizations, public health informatics organizations, and public health professional associations. And we deleted referencing any specific organization. That's the change. Should develop a new national strategy for public health informatics capacity building to increase the number of skilled workers in the public health workforce. So those were the four core recommendations. We then go into providing background. This is regarding the hearing, regarding some of the messages. At the bottom of the first page of the letter, you can see the definitions that we give. But by informatics standards, we mean these. By public health, we mean these. By population health, we mean these. So then the second page of the letter is pretty much background and really referencing some of the key messages that we heard during the hearing. The third page highlights the overarching themes and, again, highlights the concerns about the current state of the public health information infrastructure that needs some attention and sustained investment and a few other of the key themes and messages. So the recommendations came down to basically the this one that I just mentioned. This is in more detail, the actual recommendation. So recommendation number one, HHS should pursue the development and implementation of a new national public health informatics standards strategic initiative. Again, we're replacing the reference to a Public Health Systems Improvement Act. And then under recommendation 1.1, HHS should establish a public health information infrastructure trust fund to be jointly governed by CDC and an organization representing the states and local practice communities. And this fund will serve as a dedicated funding source to enhance the information infrastructure needed to support public health functions. So, and there's some, of course, more detail about the areas we believe this fund will help to provide this needed ongoing financial support. I'm not going to read all those details. We went through and read them during the May 15 call. Recommendation 1.2, the HHS should also leverage this public health infrastructure trust fund to provide sustained funding for these other. The only thing we did here was adding the word and in the last statement. All right, that was recommendation one. Recommendation number two, HHS should work with the public health community to establish a national public health informatics standards collaborative initiative that will help accelerate the adoption and implementation of standards in public health programs. We made a few clarification edits during the May call, the May 15 full committee call, work towards their harmonization and appropriate linkages of demographics in public health databases. We wanted to include a statement about the appropriateness of linkages basically expressing some some cautionary notes about, making linkages to databases. Establish pilot programs that clearly document and demonstrate the importance of bidirectional information exchanges between public health and clinical care, and a few others. So that's the second recommendation. Then we provide some more background for the third recommendation, which is basically HHS should leverage several different policy programs and initiatives, including the Affordable Care Act and the EHR Incentives Program, to align incentives and develop new components of the value proposition for public health, for the public health agenda that includes identification of use cases and benefits of and significance of adopting and using public health informatics standards. And then the last recommendation, I think it was recommendation four, HHS in partnership with National Public Health Collaboration Organizations, Public Health Informatics Organizations, and Public Health Professional Associations to develop this national strategy for public health informatics capacity building. So we're, and I think that's the last recommendation. So really, we're reflecting on some of the key big pieces that we thought were needed in order to be advanced in order to pursue this goal of improving public health informatics, public health information systems, and then advancing the adoption of standards in public health, which were a sort of a new sort of national strategy for public health informatics standards, a information infrastructure trust fund, a national collaborative involving public health, federal and state and local public health and professional organizations, and advancing workforce, basically. So those were our four core elements that we wanted to recommend the Secretary to advance, move forward. So I'm going to stop there, turn it to our chair, and open up for some
discussion. I entertain a motion to approve.
I move so. So moved.
Second.
Discussion. Leslie.
I apologize for bringing it up now, but when the original idea was statutory, it would have been in the statute to establish the trust fund. I don't know whether HHS itself has the power to establish a trust fund. I'm not sure that we want to say it should take that particular form, but maybe support funding mechanisms rather than a specific trust fund.
It's true. We need statutory authority to create a trust fund, but I think a similar word like dedicated funding or something that's, you know, a similar concept,
yeah.
I think. Would
more generic?
Just
yeah.
More generic.
That was actually one because I was really concerned about that. The second thing, and again, I'm not sure about this, but and this kind of comes from thinking about the work group. Should we be adding technology to this? Because you have a whole thing about informatics, but if there's not enough development of technology to kind of have these things be linked and disseminated. So I don't know. It's very ambivalent about whether to kind of...
Well, we cover technology through the word information infrastructure. The technical information infrastructure is what we're referring to when we say...
Okay, so that'll include the...
Public health information infrastructure, we're talking about, in many respects, the technology behind that infrastructure.
Okay. All right.
So the information systems.
Okay.
And technology.
Okay.
Bill?
I like all of this because I still don't think we've got the name of the initiative right. I like the idea of a strategic initiative, but it's much more than standards. If you look at all the bullets you've got under that, and even Walter, as you play with what you just said, you're talking about public health information infrastructure.
True.
And so I would advocate that it be called the National Public Health Information Infrastructure Strategic Initiative. And then, then standards has its sub-bullet.
Yep.
Funding has its sub-bullet. Workforce has its sub-bullet.
I like it. It's better. Thank you. Yes, absolutely.
I see a lot of agreement. Anyone opposed to what Bill just opposed? Proposed?
Tag on to it just briefly. I think if we did what Bill said, then the virtue would be then we could say what are the components of that infrastructure. There's policy, there's technology, there's a set of standards, and then the worst thing would really hang together very cleanly.
That, for me, takes care of the concern I had that they may do the other parts and not think enough about that.
Let the record show that Bill stayed relieved Vicki's concerns. I mean, that's
how often does that happen?
Great. So, to back to Leslie's point,
did we get?
I'm sorry.
Did we get Jim's
point?
All
I said is, if you accept Bill's top level frame, then you can say the components of that infrastructure are policy, technology.
Infrastructure would include
and workforce. Yes, policy,
workforce.
Would be perfect.
With the goal of
We'll need to insert it in the...
You don't need to do it now.
I'm going to make a note here. Policy, technology...
Standards.
Workforce. For now. And we can add that statement, yes.
You want to use the workforce?
Well, we specifically reference workforce in recommendation. We can say workforce...
Is informatics a separate component from technology? Question. Because that's the intention from the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, the way we define informatics.
That's good. That's better.
All right. Policy, informatics, technology, standards, workforce, and other resources. Yeah. Okay. Now, Leslie's comment, establish a public health information infrastructure. I mean, that's why we're putting this in capitalized form. We really want to name things and be impactful in naming them, not just be generic as should find different public health funding sources or different funding sources. We want to really try to capture elements. If you see in the recommendation three, we say, you know, maybe it's, a national public health informatics standards collaborative. I mean, all these are sort of capitalized titles for initiatives that are impactful.
It connotes something that's more permanent. I remember talking about this.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah, because we went through this several times, and we were like you. Why be so specific? And then we talk ourselves into.
But my question, which I have not legally researched, is I do not know whether we have the statutory authority. I don't know whether HHS.
Jim just said that the department has a statutory authority to establish a trust fund.
We can dedicate funds. We can do a lot of things, but a trust fund is a very formal.
How about change?
Very formal. We don't have any of them.
Right.
Yeah, I think dedicated funding was Jim's recommendation.
Yeah, that was the consensus.
You could say dedicated.
Dedicated fund.
Continuing.
Dedicated fund.
Dedicated.
Okay.
Everybody happy?
Is that legal?
Whether you can capitalize.
We can deal with it.
Is there a person that can tell us these things?
We can create a fund.
Okay. Sure.
I mean, it means a budget.
It could take different names.
Basically, it's all year to year.
Jack,
it's not
do you
a secret,
have...
It's a question. It's not a content question. It's a packaging question. Is this the first communication the new incoming secretary will receive from us?
Great question.
Change of name?
I think so.
If so, and I don't know what happened the first time Secretary Sebelius received a note from us, but is it appropriate to use our standard cover letter, or should we say something different? This is the first time she'll be hearing from us.
Yeah, we could have a sentence that opens up and says,
it's our standard.
Now that you've been here so long, we won't introduce you to one of your problem children. It's called the NCPHS.
Something.
No, one of your solution children.
You mean the production of the letter?
Yeah, that's our standard letter. And when it's the 16th or 17th one, it's okay. But when it's the first one, I was wondering if we did anything different when Sebelius got her first letter.
We start off by saying, you got to read this.
Does this go back to the conversation about maybe we use this as a meet-and-greet opportunity, set some context before we deliver the letter?
I think that's what I meant, some bridge from what wasn't to what is.
How would you suggest we do that?
I'm sure you'll be hearing more from us, and we'd like to hear more from you, but here's our this is paraphrasing, but this is our first opportunity to share some recommendations with you. Just something other than the standard.
I think that's a great suggestion.
Yes.
So you're saying this is our first letter, something like?
Well, maybe, yeah, just you want this to be the very first thing. You're Madam Secretary.
I think it's the opener.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sure so, other people will read this before she does, but she'll probably eventually read it.
So Walter is prepared to be your scribe, as if he's using an unfamiliar electronic health record for you in your behalf.
Well, welcome to your new job.
good luck.
That's right. Best wishes. Jim, what's the right
we're going to do?
Yeah, I'll leave this to Jim.
Our first letter to Secretary Sebelius was introductory about the committee, so
yeah, that should stay.
Yes, exactly.
I'm looking for something between Madam Secretary and the National Committee on Vital Statistics.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah, so look, they're welcome to your job. Yeah.
Something a little more substantive than that, but with that message, with the notion that she'll be hearing more from us, but this is only the first.
Kit Carey, do you have a suggestion?
I've never seen another go that way.
Yeah, we can handle it another way.
I've never seen a letter go, you know, addressed that way. I understand your concern, but any letters I've seen, the only thing we make sure is we put the right name.
We should probably change that too.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for pointing that out.
How about a cover?
I didn't notice it was wrong. I just meant it's a general statement.
How about a cover letter from Larry?
I've not ever seen that we went through that, you know, this is our first letter.
Unless it's a personal letter where you say congratulations.
Business letters that would
I think, though, it's going to be hard to wordsmith here, but I think we could add a sentence maybe at the end of the first paragraph that says, that we're say a little bit more about what we do, but then say this is the forward this first set of recommendations.
I'm just going to say
something like that. But we could. I don't think we can wordsmith it now, but we could.
Because we're going to put that at the end of the first paragraph.
Because then you go into all the detail. I think you want to say that this is. That we provide reports and recommendations and advice to the department in these areas. This is the first that will be obvious to her that this is the first set of recommendations to her, and we look forward to working with you in the future to help in healthcare. The usual, we can help you with that, but I think you need it up front because you don't want that at the end of the.
Oh, yeah.
The other four pages.
One concept is not maybe the right words, but, as the new Secretary of Health and Human Services, we want to introduce you to one of your advisory committees, the National Committee on Environmental Health Statistics, and then give some more background about the National Committee first, and then explain that the purpose of this letter is to this. Right? Is that what you were
saying? Two goals. It acknowledges the business, but it gives us an opportunity to say something other than kind of troll stuff that's there.
Yeah. We can draft this, and if the committee feels that we can bring it back tomorrow morning to take action, or if the committee feels that we can handle that, or we can take
action. Yeah, either way, but I agree with what you were saying, Jim, because the letter is going to be posted, so you don't want to make it, extra personal, but you can add more content where you mentioned, so you're getting across your point, and it's an excellent point that it's the first communication with her, even though we will be hopefully having some other things before the next meeting.
So we have a motion and we have a second, and it's a matter of deciding whether we table the motion until tomorrow or we approve the letter with whatever introductory edits we do.
I want one more comment.
Pardon me, Bill. Sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. There's just one more thing that I've been trying to figure out how we might address. So this says to advance and bring to par public health information systems with electronic health records.
Can you give us a page number?
I'm on page 2. I'm right in the first bullet. So it says to bring to par with electronic health records, and then in the fourth bullet, it talks about aligning public health reporting, meaningful use in public health reporting, and ensuring public health data requirements are incorporated into clinical systems, which I like. I think we want to bring to par and align public health. I mean, what I'm trying to do is not have these sound siloed. That's all I'm trying to do. And bring to par public health system.
Why don't we say that, like you just said, bring to par.
Par, so you don't have to.
And align with.
Bring to par public health information systems, aligning public health informatics standards with electronic health record systems. Because in reality, we're bringing to par the public health information systems, and we're trying to align the standards, the informatics standards themselves, right?
Yeah.
Does that work?
Does that work?
Do you want something, Walter?
It's so far behind. Yep.
Don't you want to bring to par the systems of the public health information systems and electronic health record systems and align the standards, corresponding standards? Because without that, you're aligning standards, the system.
Is it only aligning standards, though?
Electronic records already have public health systems and standards in the syndromic surveillance systems. Part of them and the EHR certification requires syndromic surveillance. They have public health record systems
today. But all the stuff we're doing in the IOM committee on social and behavioral determinants of health, you know, these worlds are very unaligned. There are connections.
Yeah,
but they're unaligned, and our goal is actually, you know, not to have them homogenized, but to have them aligned, and I'm not smart enough to know if that alignment is more than at the standards level. It's not. I'm not smart enough to answer that one.
I think the similar concept, Bill, is that Mike was just telling me, we completed a study looking at health IT needs in the public health community, and aside from funding, I think the idea of, and we probably should add it, it's the idea of interoperability and exchange between the clinical community and the public health. Among public health and across to the clinical community as well, so the linkage and the alignment would be with the EHR. The interoperability and linkage would be another feature of the initiative.
Can we? I mean, otherwise, if we keep digging deeper and deeper, it gets really convoluted.
Yeah.
What if to your point, Bill? I thought you nailed it. To bring to par public health information systems with electronic health record systems and align the two. That's it. Because that's what you're
doing. How do you feel about align and link?
Align and
link. Linkage, I believe, is a different concept.
Yeah. And align and link the two.
Yeah,
that's it. Comma?
Well, we can say also to insert here, because that's important, the interoperability part, you know, to bring to par public health information system with electronic health records.
Well, is it align and link the two?
Doesn't that convey?
Align and link
interoperable.
Exchange?
I
like align and link. Simple is better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We don't want to be too.
just
maybe we could all get T-shirts. Our job is to align
with
the
whip inflation.
Maybe it's not.
Whip inflation.
Probably need to say better. You need to say better align and link the two, because today, in some places, in some ways, they are linked. So it's really better.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's good.
Okay. Enough trouble.
I just want to kind of follow up on, I guess, what Mike was saying to you, because I get a little nervous about this just being electronic health record systems and asking about, can't we say something a little broader? And Mike just said it was about kind of the clinical care side. So this is very specific. I don't know if it requires another bullet, but in some way, I think we should be talking about clinical care.
So you want to replace the word electronic with clinical?
I don't know. I mean, I think that's very specific, and we definitely need that. So it's almost like calling attention to the EHRs, I think, is very important. And we have kind of a body of hearings and everything, I think, that have helped you reach that. But the clinical care, I think maybe it should be separate. I'm not sure. Or another sentence in that bullet or something. But I don't want to unline that misalign the EHR record systems, but there should be something about clinical care, and I'm not sure how to, where to put it.
Jim?
One option, and I agree with you, Vicki, absolutely. One option would be, say, clinical information systems, parentheses, including EHRs and PHRs. And
okay. That, yeah.
That's looking like the ideas.
Are you going to put a parens that says, yeah?
Oh, including electronic?
Yeah.
It's probably valuable to call out EHRs as kind of the core, but it's certainly not the only.
And PHRs.
I would put PHRs in also, but whatever.
PHR?
Because
that's a critical. EHRs are prone to be the doctor and nurses, or the doctors or the hospitals or something, information system. But patients increasingly will have them, care managers have them. You know, there's a whole care team, and, you know, the more we leave it open so that it's the whole care team, not just one part of it.
Is it a personal health record system or personal health records?
Well, the record itself.
We can get rid of some of the systems.
I like the word systems.
Jack, how are we doing? Are you okay with this?
Plural on the record.
Can I ask you a question real quick? That implies personal health records is far more advanced than public health, which I disagree.
I find the assertion that EHRs are best, the more, you know, there's been a lot more money spent on them.
That's why
more people suffering from them. I don't think that's a particularly useful kind of assertion to make, even if there were some sense in which it's true. So I find it. Of EHRs, I find that odd. I think that's why align and link seems to me like a good way to say it.
I don't disagree. I'm just simply suggest that maybe you don't include personal health records.
Well,
why don't you just leave it
there? Personal health records that are extremely high function and have tens of millions of users, and there are personal health records that have been withdrawn from the market because no one could use them, like Microsoft's. And the same thing's true of EHRs. You know, we saw this morning, what, there were 1,700, some incredible number that made first, you know, made MU1, and now there's only 600. Well, there's only 12 of them that are viable. So what are we talking? You know, I just think saying better, worse, advanced, more advanced just isn't the point. And it would be hard to justify in any careful way.
So one thing is that personal health records is really not necessarily part of clinical information systems.
But there it is.
Personal health records in many ways are outside of the clinical health record system.
Well, but see, that's definitional. If the patient's the core of the care team, then they're not. If the patient's just some innocent bystander than they are. But that's part of the point is I would say that what we want to say is there are information systems that are used to help the care team do a better job. And if the patient's part of the care team, then PHR is a part of that. And certainly some PHRs, patients receive clinical decision support, they act on clinical decision support, they update their record, their official doctor record, that, you know, all the stuff they do. So there again, it seems to me it would just be sort of simpler just to say clinical information systems. If you want to leave PHRs out, it's no big deal.
No.
But I think we'd be smart to drive to the whole care team.
I have a suggestion. I'm going to defer to you guys about this. But anything we list here creates a level of specificity that I'm not convinced we're prepared to do. And this is our critical idea that we've got to state in a way that's understandable. And it's to advance and bringing to par public. The problem is public health hasn't had the infusion of capital it's got to have in order to be in a position to partner with the clinical healthcare delivery system for the new world. That's our problem. So we need to advance and bring to par public health information systems with. Why don't we just say rapidly evolving clinical information systems and better align and link them?
That's good.
Get rid of that.
Simple as better.
Sold.
Now buy a t-shirt.
Oh, you just simple as better. Get rid of clinical information.
Hey, clinical. Yeah.
Oh, I still got to play.
Okay, sorry.
Now you get
these
on.
Systems again.
We do.
We
as a committee, we
twice.
Do watch systems.
So is this what you want? Is this what you were saying, Larry?
That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
What do you think about it, Walter?
I like that.
Susan told me to say get rid of together.
Any interest in replacing the last two words with those?
Exactly.
Just to get rid of them.
Simon Cohen
and change
here
it to those.
Make them.
Them is a personal pronoun. How about link those?
Link the two.
Link the two. Link
them.
Link those is probably.
Susan?
Link the two. Every use one word when you can use.
No, I don't think it's necessarily two.
Link them.
Yeah.
Done.
I'm bringing up a grammatical point that's correct.
That doesn't mean it has value.
What's the grammatical point?
About the use of them.
It's a personal pronoun.
Right. And
but,
so they're not personal items. They're objects. So it's just these or those. Okay.
I'm less wet to that.
So this would be these?
That's why I was trying to use another thing, you know, link the two, but there's an objection about the two.
We'll leave that to you guys.
Pick one.
Those.
Oh, it is.
How about better alignment and linking?
Yeah, for the
better alignment.
So better alignment and
right.
But
then you don't end with the composition, too. Whatever is
better.
Okay.
Diminishing returns.
Okay. What else?
We can test.
All the questions.
Bill's calling the question.
All right.
Let me ask your preferences here. Would you like to table this till tomorrow morning? We've got time where we can take a look at these revisions, or do you want to vote now? Mitali wants to vote now.
Can I just add one more edit? The very last sentence. Sorry, guys. Very last sentence on page 8. The very last sentence says, to achieve adequate resources are required to achieve real and actionable values. Isn't it to achieve real value and actionable items?
How about real value? Simple.
How about just
real value?
Real value.
Done.
You want
values
with an S?
No.
Just one
value.
Okay, this side of the room wants to vote on this now. How about this side of the room?
Going one.
Okay.
So they'll editorially clean up.
Yeah, we'll clean it up and add again the introductory
paragraph.
Let's vote.
Okay, so the question's called. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Anyone abstaining? Since I'm going to sign the letter, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to reserve the option to work with Terry to do some final editing related to grammar. We will not edit the concepts and the ideas, okay?
Thank you. Right. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you.
Good work. Good work.
Okay, we're to our 1:30 item, but we're actually well ahead of schedule because of the space we've created for tomorrow. I want to start off with Debbie. Oops, sorry, I'm going to start off
quick
with Jeff.
Question. If there is no new money, at some point are we going to come back to this and say these are the things that we recommend doing in the absence of new money 6 months from now, a year from now?
I suspect we will.
Well, a strategic initiative can work either way. There can be new money. That's why I like the idea of a strategic initiative. It can be new money, or it can be marshaling your current resources towards these priorities. So you kind of get action either way.
Jim, what I hear you asking is, how will we know if there's any progress on this? And that's a recurring thing that about once a year we have an extensive discussion about. And let's think about putting that on the agenda actually sometime for a review of the responses to our recent work and put this on the list and come back to it maybe in the fall.
And the other thing I asked to get in that category at the right time is a really a sort of a formal briefing of the committee on HHS's response to the IOM report on measurement for the public health that recommended a number of, I mean, I think to know what has and has not been done relative to that at some point should really be a pretty extensive briefing.
If you agree, we'll put this on the next executive committee call to talk with Debbie and Jim about how we could go about doing that.
That'd be great.
Okay. Debbie, could you help us get on the public record now, a reminder to everyone about what we've been doing lately when we weren't face-to-face and we were doing these virtual meetings and stuff?
Right. I put this on the agenda mainly for us to just kind of take a deep breath and realize that May 15th call was pretty important. We have had calls of the full committee, and maybe have taken an action. But the original purpose of that May 15th call was jam-packed with three action items that were proposed. Two actually were approved at the time on the call because we had a quorum, because we had a Federal Register notice. This call was treated like an actual meeting, which it was. It just was changing of the venue, which we might be seeing more and more. So I just wanted folks to feel comfortable with that and provide me any opportunity for feedback if you like. But that finding from the February hearing, I wanted in the record that and it's already posted for the pharmacy benefits, prior authorization, all of this is from standards, the health plan identifier, electronic fund transfer, and the ERA operating rules. That was a very content-packed letter. And the fact that we were able to cover it on that call was very significant, along with having the timeliness to respond to ICD-10 delay. It was pretty important for that one to have gotten into record when it did, and so we appreciate that. I think the fact that you were able to cover this public health exchange, this information letter, the way you did today is a testament to the conversation you had May 15th. So all of that is the communication and just kind of providing some way of connecting between the early year call and the summer call. That's kind of been a zone where, at this point, because the committee's effectiveness and productivity, we might want to consider, I think Walter mentioned that, is considering that as maybe something we might do on an ongoing basis. So that we already have our 2015 dates lined up on the agenda. We're not going to schedule anything now, of course. Everything will depend on timing. But it doesn't look like things are going to recede anytime soon as far as work and workload and effectiveness. So consider that we might be plugging you in doing a poll in February for a call in April and May. So I wanted to get that in the record, and then that was, and see if there's any feedback, any commentary, or any comments from the about the May 15th, the process, the procedure, how it worked for you. We had public comment. It was logistically amazing for, as I mentioned on the call, for Marietta, Janine, Catherine to pull that together. So I just wanted to provide any space if you had any comments on that.
Yes, particularly if you have concerns about it, if it made you uncomfortable in some way, and something we need to address. Yes, Vicki.
It didn't make me uncomfortable.
You can relax, Mel. She doesn't need anything right now.
No, but I thought that it was really an advancement in terms of the way in which we could work. And so anything that we can do to kind of figure out how to do that even at a next step. And one of the ideas I had, and I just don't know what the federal capacity is when other people have to plug in, but in terms of thinking about these collaborative technology tools, I mean, we bring people in often for meetings using Google Hangout Plus, but, you know, you need something else to do it at that level. But it allows you to run the slides. It allows you to see. People can indicate when they, you know, want to talk. Cause I would say that was the only point at which it was sometimes hard is, like, you have a point, you needed to wait, and you weren't sure, like, can somebody see that I have a point? But with the other, we might be able to do that. So there's, you know, I don't know at a federal level what you can use, but there is software where we're buying some where you can have as many as 500 people participate at a time. So if we did that, I think it would make it even easier because we could even look at a letter being edited in real time.
So that's a statement of support, I think. Walter and then Jim.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that because I think we're more and more going to see the use of this. We all probably participate in many other similar calls where there is to just name a few, you know, WebEx or GoToMeeting type technology that accommodates, you know, whatever, 200 people. There's ways to ensure that only certain people have access to certain things and only certain people can speak. All that is already so much used that I think we should really consider that as a more operational way of doing our meetings virtually. And certainly I expect that we will be meeting virtually more often.
Okay. Jim?
Two thoughts. To Raj's point much earlier, if we did hearings that way, it would make people who are far less well-funded able to participate in ways that are hard when they have to be physically present. The second thing is there is a primitive but emerging science of virtual teamwork, and I think we could at least start to be smart about when we're face-to-face and when we're virtual. You know, the more something's new, the more we're still making sense of something together, the more it needs to be face-to-face, the more it's the follow-up to some to face-to-face meeting, the easier it is to do it virtually. So,
I concur that the meetings, the telephonic approach is great for editing a document if we get those tools like Vicki discussed. Many of us use them on a daily basis, and they really do help. I am concerned, though, however, that some of these topics or conversations do warrant in-person hearings, but I think they could be augmented for the communities that cannot travel, maybe as a secondary set of opportunity for us to get input. But I do think there's a tremendous amount by sitting around a table looking at each other and working through the hearing testimony, and that I think we need to give ourselves more time to do that effectively.
Bill?
I want to sort of tag on to Jim and Alex's point. I thought that it worked very well, and what in essence we did was we took something where we had had a really good discussion here, and that it gave feedback and we could finish it,
yeah.
And we had the first discussion of something which then left feedback that we were then able to finish here.
Yeah.
I don't think we could have done this last conversation around that sentence or those two sentences in that first bullet anyway but face-to-face. and I at least as well, because I think we were really bringing it, it was at our convergence. That sentence was about our convergence thing, so it's across disciplines. And I at least find testimony to be very ineffective when you cannot have eye contact with who you're testifying to. So I think we've got to be very careful, but I think it works as part of a process.
I agree completely. If we ever want to really gang up on Ob and Walter, we can ask them to do the meeting they did yesterday virtually.
Believe it or not, I've been in virtual hearings of five and a half hours, where there are six panels, each panel with three or four testifiers. So it has happened in some very difficult topics, and Leslie and Linda probably could remember the hearing that we had with the Tiger team. And there are ways to get some things organized, like if people want to speak, you can raise your hand electronically and all that, and the chair will see or the whoever is facilitating. So there, but I would not replace that with the real in-person hearing. I agree. We yesterday had actually three testifiers on the phone, and we were able to bring them by phone, and it was helpful, but it was certainly a lot more dynamic to have.
But to connect the comments, perhaps next time or sometime when we bring those three people in, they'll be on the screen.
That would be another.
There's really no reason why we don't do that. And it, in a way, does disadvantage the testifier that it is not in the room in that way. And the consensus opinion is the committee is revved up, ready to go for meeting virtually. But we wish to be strategic about when we do that, and we all recognize that there are some things that need to be sequenced properly in order for the virtual meetings to work correctly.
What I was going to suggest is that either it might be nice to bring a technology consultant to us and to either do this through someone in the department or for us to look in the work group, because the people can tell you, like, the stage of what kind of work to do that face-to-face versus using technology. I mean, even on our project, we have some of those rules. If the work is this, we don't. When we need FaceTime for certain things, I mean, sometimes we make mistakes. But I think it might help to have some guidance on doing that so that we can actually do the most productive things, particularly if we're talking about reaching out during any hearings or anything like that. We need to kind of, thoughtfully know that we're doing it in a way in which both the person and us, we get what we want, but that the public is also able to participate as well. So there may be people in the department that can do this, or we can ask in the work group.
Yeah, we have technology, and in fact, the Health IT Policy Committee, UNC, they normally have those meetings in person, but I'd say more than half of the group participate by phone. And there, the technology allows you to see the PowerPoints.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You see people raise their hand, and it restricts it to the members, and then it opens it up. So there's a fair amount of technology available. And again, we have to be careful as an advisory committee to be sure that there's an opportunity for public comment. So what we do, if there's a draft being discussed, we post it on the website. I think we give them 10 days, and then we, so the public can see it. They could comment via phone or write in. So.
Yes, I really want to underscore Jim's last point. This was the only apprehension I had about this meeting was the amount of time that was available for public review and comment. It's back to British trial. All the trials should be fair, but it also should look like it's fair. And if we're going to do this, I think one of our things that we really want to service is we do not want to use this as a method that gets so accelerated that in reality it doesn't give the opportunity for genuine reaction and input in a transparent way. So we could find ourselves constrained to put something off because we say we just can't get it posted and out there. And I'm wanting to have this discussion in public today so that those people that are, it's critical for us to engage, they need to be aware that we're anticipating doing that more, not less,
mm-hmm.
and as part of due diligence and light of day sorts of conversations. Yeah. So, yes, Lynn.
I think one of the issues is notice, and I don't know how robust our list of NCVHS participants, those who want to be notified, is, and if that's something that we work and maintain well, we could take a little more assurance that we've really given notice as well as far in advance as we can.
Let me just respond to that, because that was my next point about the e-blast. One of the first times that we updated our, we called it listserv, now with the government, we have a term for that now, GovDelivery. And if you're on GovDelivery, you will have gotten notices about this meeting and notices about the letters. And if you have not received notices about that, let us know, because we need to get you on the GovDelivery itself. We pulled our major players who always come to the meetings. We pulled the folks who were identified as coming to the last couple of meetings and looking at standards. All of those folks were on that that distribution for GovDelivery. So we felt really comfortable about that, number one. Number two, as far as having the material posted, we looked at the calendar very carefully to see when and how long and the items were up, and we had no negative feedback. Things really worked nicely, and so I wanted to make sure to let you know how much we appreciated the material coming in an amazing timely manner, thanks to Terry and Walter. It was like to the hour that we needed something to get it posted right that day, got it in, got it up, so we could say in the transmittal and put the link in here. The information is posted. These letters, please review and provide. Do you have anything else?
It also helped because
you might need to get a microphone.
Upwards of 77 people on the WebEx session yesterday, the most we've ever had.
Oh, wow.
It's really coming, moving and coming, so thank you.
Leslie.
I would, if we anticipate these being regular meetings, I think it would be very nice to schedule them in the same way we schedule the regular meetings. So now, for the two we anticipate, or one next year, and do the kind of polling around of people. I mean, this is not a comment, but I got completely out of the loop on the population framework because several of the calls were right, I mean, maybe a week's notice, and my schedule was uncontrollable, and so I didn't get to participate.
That's another good thing about our culture as a committee. We basically expect each other to participate in what we sign up for and to contribute your viewpoints, and you can't do that without proper notice. Every now and then we'll find ourselves when we back something up, it's got to happen by now, and then we wind up accepting, if you will, representation from the different parts of the committee, and we settle for that so that we can keep going and do something, and I think that's a good place for the chair of the committee, for the time being is me, to be a point of contact. If you feel like it's not working, then we've got to make this work for all of you as members of the committee, and we'll do our best to do that. But every now and then, it would be my inclination to say, well, as bad as I want Bill Stead on that call, it's more important that call happen than Bill have, and I'll talk to him before, and I'll talk to him after, and we'll do X, Y, Z, and we will wind up doing some calls where you say, I told you I couldn't do it then, and then you should feel fine about it, and you should bother me if you don't feel fine about it.
But to Leslie's point, there will be emergencies, fine. But to Leslie's point, with a group like this, I find it better to schedule slots that we may not end up using.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say.
The problem if we say, okay, we had this slot, but we don't need it, so everybody you know what to do with your time.
Yeah. So some people have virtual meetings, and we'll have potential meetings.
No, but we have, for a couple of years, scheduled, I think, Fridays 3 to 4. Susan will remember.
That's right.
And we sometimes we used it, sometimes we didn't. And I think that
that really
helped.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else, David? All right. We have given until 2:30 now to hear from Jim about another strategic planning thing that is a relatively big deal.
I think it is. Thank you, Larry.
So pay attention here.
Okay. The section, one of the sections of the Affordable Care Act, you'll remember this. I think we discussed it briefly. It directs the secretary to establish a what is called a review committee. And it says it may be the NCVHS or maybe someone else. And we have been within the department talking about how we wanted to do this. It's in the section on administrative simplification in ACA, and it follows. And I think what we want to do today is test the waters in terms of is the committee interested and receptive to this idea. And it would be the committee, the NCVHS, would serve as the review committee. Secretary would designate NCVHS as the review committee outlined here in Section 1104. And basically the function is the following. There's, and again, it would be the NCVHS doing what it normally does. We're not, and we want to avoid mission creep here, and we want to avoid that what the committee does is perfectly suited to what is the main part of what's required, but we want to be sure the committee's okay with this. So, just a general wording is that not later than April 1st, 2014, and not less. So don't worry about that. It's like many deadlines that we've done most of them. The secretary, acting through the review committee, shall conduct hearings to evaluate and review the HIPAA standards and the operating rules. And I think the idea here is the totality of them, this is bringing sort of the overview and the evaluative perspective to the individual standards that we've been dealing with and recommending for now. So I think we were getting into this morning already with the annual report. It's sort of a step back to say, all right, we've done all these. We've done this standard and that standard. We've done this in terms of privacy and security. It's sort of a look back. Well, now, based on our own deliberations and bringing in representatives from the industry and all of our stakeholders, what's the sense of where we are and where we'd go next? And then the committee it says to prepare a report biannually, providing recommendations to the secretary on the standards and improving and so on. Which again I think is what we would normally do anyway. So and then the only other addition is that. There's one more provision. It basically asks for coordination of the administrative simplification standards with the health IT standards, the clinical side and the EHR standards. Yeah. So basically it would say in developing recommendations under this section, the review committee shall ensure coordination as appropriate with the standards that support the certified EHR technology approved by the Office of the National Coordinator, which is what we've been thinking about anyway. How do these standards fit together? So our own view is we wanted to be sure that we, number one, we have the bandwidth. Number two, this is a budget neutral. I want to be clear about this. We don't have a lot of, we talked to CMS and others where this is basically doing this focus within our current operations, our current mechanisms and so on. So there, and again, it would be based on our view as on what the committee normally does, bringing like you did with standards and like you did with other things. But the focus would be sort of on the totality, exactly what we were talking about today. What's the impact? Are we moving the needle towards, in a global sense, towards administrative simplification and what were thought to be the goals and so on. And again, it's based on, we're not going to do original research or evaluation. I think the idea here is the committee's deliberation plus the stakeholders coming in as well. So we talked to CMS and others. If the committee's receptive,
We would have to go through one more step of getting the official designation from the secretary, but I don't think anyone would be, I don't think that would be difficult. I think that this is something that within our HHS, and I think within the industry too, as we've talked about, has come up about, well, how are we, where are we now, and where, you know, how does it look as a, beyond the individual standards, what's the total impact, and where do we go, and where are we strong, and where are we weak, and so on, and make recommendations to HHS to carry forward from there.
So the question Jim is putting before us is, if asked, are you willing to serve?
Yeah. And we did discuss it with the co-chairs of the standards subcommittee, and they I'll let them speak for themselves, but we want to have the full committee think about this.
Justine, I'd like to put you on the spot. Really like to hear your reactions to this.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if it's my place to comment, but so glad you asked. I think it's very important to make sure we have 18 members of the committee. This summer we were doing the first assignment from the Affordable Care Act, I think we had 13, and it was, very extraordinary amount of work that had to be done. Walter's leadership, as always, was tremendous. So I just would put that out there. I know that we're in a time of change, we have to get these appointments through, but I would be thinking preemptively of who's coming up, who's staying on, and who's filling, because it's very hard to do 13 people.
Exactly.
But I think it makes tremendous sense for this committee to continue to be involved. I think we understand this in a way that has depth and breadth, and I think it fits very well.
Alex.
I echo your sentiments about being at a full committee level. I also think we need some more shameless plugs for people to come with a standards background and to participate in the subcommittee. I'm already feeling extremely stretched in our ability to handle the variety of topics that are being crammed into one day of hearings, and maybe it'll mean that we need to step back and have a little bit more of a refining approach to what we accept to take on and how it really helps us to achieve the convergence mantra that we've all been speaking to, and my sense is that this committee has already agreed that this is a natural fit for us in past discussions, but I do think that there is some resource dynamic here. There's a project management effort, and I think that we need to look at where's the roadmap and how does this fit into it.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think the way the committee has been working together as a whole is a really nice model, because this is an overview kind of thing. And so, for example, although I went to the public health standards, I haven't routinely gone to standards, but for something like this, I certainly would, because of the privacy kinds of questions. I would also say that I think this is just something HHS needs to recognize, the importance of staff support. You just can't say how important somebody like Terry on the HIPAA report or Maya on the HIPAA report. I mean, that never would have gotten done without that kind of work. And, you know, wherever this happens within HHS, and I certainly think it should happen here, that's critical. But I think HHS knows that.
Well, see no other comments. Let me say this back to you. I think our answer to Jim is very nice to be asked. Yes, we're willing to serve in this role if asked, and we want to make sure you understand that doing this requires the committee being fully populated and a continuation of strong staffing. Is that close?
And Walter's not allowed to be term limited.
And Walter, listen, I'll second that. I made the motion. All in favor?
I'm more polite.
All right. Now it's called a life sentence.
Thank you. Well, I mean, it's been incredible. The
support that we have had, and Terry has been just an invaluable member of our team. It's been incredible, the participation of the members of the committee that we have, and certainly as Alice and we've been commenting on before, we definitely need additional members to join us. I wanted to mention two things. One is the incredible support of the industry, and in terms of the industry, I mean the people that are really coming and sharing their perspectives and their expertise. Yesterday we had, by my last count, 40 testifiers, and they all were passionate and they all wanted to, and we couldn't actually have everybody wanted to, and we ended up actually opening a few of the times to have others testify, and we receive a lot of testimony in writing. So it's with that regard that I really feel that the committee is seen really as that forum, that place to bring in issues. The reason we ended up having 7 topics in 7 hours, as I called it yesterday, was because we went out to ask the industry and see what are the key issues today. That every June we have this major hearing. What are the key issues that we need to bring as an industry to the table in front of the national committee? And these were the core topics that the industry really thought we as a national committee needed to hear. Very much in line and aligned with the request from the secretary and the provisions in the Affordable Care Act about this review committee. In fact, I wanted to mention that the DSMO, the Designated Standard Maintenance Organizations, which involves HL7, X12, the NCPDP, and UBC, and UCC, the Dental Content Committee, all the bodies, they actually submitted a letter in support of designating the National Committee to be the review committee. So I just wanted to mention that because I think it's important to also note that the industry is very much, in support of that idea, and we very much appreciate and, really thank the industry for that support.
Yep. And frankly, I mean, I think the NCVHS was envisioned as what the review committee would be in the law, but I think out of deference to let the secretary decide, they sort of always give you an alternative. But I wouldn't want to have, I can't imagine any other committee, or certainly wouldn't want to create another committee with, it could never achieve, it would be a long time before it ever achieved the knowledge and the expertise and the trust and the credibility that we already have.
Joe?
Well, to play back to our previous discussion a bit, would there be a way that we could use, have a technical, a virtual session of some ilk, including written submissions with the right staff support, that would let us aggregate the things people think we ought to be looking at, but then us go through some form of a prioritization process to say these are out of this set, which we can identify and list, so we'll recognize them. These are the ones which appear to rise to the level that we need face-to-face briefing and discussion at the full committee. Some process like that would let us be open, and it could use the virtual piece while giving us an ability to manage
the work,
the gate.
Yeah, well said. Jim?
So, a useful way to think about a group like this's work is say, we need to add the leading 10%. And I don't know what percent of the committee's work we think this will be, but at least 10%, I think. To do that, you got to say, okay, what's the trailing 10%? So I think it would be smart of us to at least entertain the idea that it's unlikely we end up with more resources, or that the current resources can do very much more work on any sustained basis. And so then the question becomes, okay, what would we do less of?
Linda?
I don't have a specific suggestion, but it may be something we think about as we develop some process. Because this is a specific set of duties,
you know, it might be done through a mechanism that crosses subcommittees or is a really a convergent where we take off our NCDHS hat and put on this review hat for a period and have a process that engages all of us to kind of step back and take a look. We may want to just talk that through some.
And I just wanted to add that I think it becomes even more important now, defining and maintaining a very well documented, I guess, work plan for as much as possible for a year, for whatever time frame, but because it really helps us define. And we try to do that in our own subcommittee. This is the work plan for the year. We know about the June hearings, which are our big hearings. We know about, normally we have a February hearing and a November hearing. We normally don't have a September hearing. Those things could change and we can adjust, but it will be very critical to really, based on this, responsibility that we would have as a review committee, to establish even a more defined work plan for the year and have some defined expectations about it. That will help staffing, that will help our own program from a programmatic process.
Vicki?
I was going to suggest something similar to what Linda was just saying, is that maybe this isn't something that stretches all year, but instead you really look at the calendar and say, this review work is going to be done during this time, and that there is a parking lot for things that come up as you go along. That way you could also expand to temporarily get staff from other places that might be useful. So, I mean, if we look at the work plan, it may be that, I don't know, during the months of, I don't know, February to April or something, that's your review time. And it fits with, you know, whatever it is that you have to do. But rather than, it's a constant all year long kind of process.
Well, the review part is one of the activities that our subcommittee will do during the year. That's why, in my view, the work plan for the year will include whatever portion we designate to be the review committee function during whatever month in the entire year. But the other activities that we have to do as a subcommittee across or throughout the year will be also highlighted.
So, well, one of the things I heard is that you're going to have to do a report. So if you think of what it took you to get the HIPAA report done, part of what I'm saying is to some extent being able to have a parking lot and then to bring in more resources will help you. I mean, if you didn't have to do a report,
that's why the work
it might be very different.
But if I could, it's not, there's not a report to Congress. The title is reporting, but it's basically recommendations like the committee normally does. It would be part of our – it's not an extra step or an extra report.
Okay.
It's what we would normally do. Except the recommendations would be of this nature. It, you know, in a sense, they're almost part of every hearing, this kind of a perspective. It says, you know, within 2 years, but we're not going to worry about this. First year, I think we have a good baseline with the annual report.
I actually look at this, when I first looked at it, okay, this dovetails real well with what we're doing. But when you look at this, through a different lens, more strategic lens.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about convergence. We're talking about roadmap. This really is the venue. This is really the vehicle for us to really shape now.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was more reactionary. So I just want to make sure people get that point.
Okay, we got it. So I think we're good to go on this. And I'd like to ask Jim.
What are the next steps from this?
Well, one next step is I want to get an update of our empty seats. Where are we with recruiting the new members?
Well, we have two seats we were filling. I think it was Bill and
Paul.
And we have two candidates. I don't want to mention their names because it doesn't work out. but they're in the queue now for the new secretary to sign. And one of them would be clearly helping with the data standards and the public health side as well. The other, we're looking at potentially the technology world of representative of the working group from that community. It's tough to find someone who, you know, who might fit in. But they're the socialized group. But
at any rate, those are in the queue now, and if the working their way through the levels in HHS, and hopefully within 3 weeks, maybe we should get them.
Oh, so they could be here in September.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah.
Are those the only two open?
Well, those are the only two until next December, I think. Right? Is that? I think so. I was looking at the dates.
The total number of members of the committee, is it 14 or 16?
18. Two from Congress, and then 16 from HHS. And I think we, other than the two, I'm pretty sure we had four absences today.
One suggestion I had is, in addition to filling in the positions, considering expanding the number of members. I know there's implications issues, but that will give us more potential people to bring in.
Well, the part of the problem is it's statutory.
Sure.
Statutory. And we could think about beeping. Oh, it is.
Maybe
it's someone else. Okay. Well, it was just a suggestion. One of the things that happened in the standards and politics meetings.
Well, I would just observe that we have proof of concept of the working group that we can expand in ways that don't require a statutory adjustment.
Yeah. No, that would there's other ways to get this extended.
Well, anything else, Jim, that we need to cover here, or are we ready for public comment?
I think we're fine. The only thing is we'll run this through the department and lawyers, and hopefully Terry will agree. So we seem to have unanimity within HHS. Our worry was that there may be a group or two on the outside that would not like the designation, but I can't imagine. It doesn't sound like that.
Walter, is there other next steps you'd like to call out?
No, I just needed to know. So at some point we will receive a communication from the secretary.
Exactly. We'll see.
If everything goes through,
yeah.
Officially designating the national.
Yeah, it'll be official designation.
That will give us the opportunity to move forward.
Okay. Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we want it on paper so we don't have to argue about it later.
Exactly. We want that. Thank you.
Okay. One last small business item is I'd like to look at tomorrow morning before we head to the subcommittee blocks. If I'm keeping track correctly, we have already done our 9-10 action items. However, I would just express a personal opinion that when I looked at the population health block at 8 o'clock, and what they need to get done, I was not convinced at all that that was going to fit into functionally 45 minutes. So what I would propose with your consent is that the population health block commence at 8 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, we technically welcome everyone, do conflicts of interest again for the morning meeting, et cetera, and that the populations group be prepared if they wish to spill over to part two of their meeting, that we could use that time if you need it. If you don't need it, that's fine. But I suspect that
it's a good idea, and the more we do that, the better chances are that we'll have Bruce here at least for part of the discussion since
okay.
he arrives in Reagan at 7:20 or something.
So if you want to start at 8:30, then would that help?
Yeah, we think that'll get, yeah, no, I think that's
already announced at the 8 a.m.
Maybe 8:30 to 9:30.
The public knows that there's an 8 a.m. meeting.
Yeah, with something changed. We can
I'm just.
Yeah,
okay.
What your call? So we could start at 8 or 8:30, but Bruce comes in later, and I didn't want you to have to work.
No, I can share it. This is. This and I'm prepared to, and Susan's doing the first part. So we're good to go at 8 o'clock in the morning. Don't misunderstand me. this is right in Bruce's wheelhouse, and therefore for him to get here at least before we finish, which we'll do if you just extend it,
okay,
would be fine with me. I'm fine going out and starting today.
I have a clear and present memory in one of our earlier previous meetings of when I was absolutely convinced that we could shorten something and be plenty of time and live to regret it. Why don't we just hold to the schedule?
And we'll take the extra time.
If you need it. Okay.
Larry, in regards to the schedule for tomorrow, I noticed that we have a half an hour for Karen Salvo tomorrow. Considering some of the discussions we've had having over the last couple of days, especially the one we've just finished, do we really think that that's enough time for that discussion interaction on where we're headed?
At least that's the amount of time that she has.
I think we're not the critical players there. I think if she can come for 10 minutes, that's how long it will be. But if she wants to stay longer, and she might, we'll be well positioned.
Please pardon the interrupt.
Okay. All right. I think we're public comments. We actually have microphones here. But yes, sir.
I mean, just on the scheduling, before the 11, there is a 15-minute update on the Data Palooza. Is that really sufficient? I don't know.
I can speak to that. I think that really what's important is the themes that emerged. I mean, this was a very different Data Palooza, and I was just going to take 15 minutes and welcome input from others who were there. But to really talk about 2009 to 2014, and actually I'm kind of writing my notes now, that this whole convergence theme, everything that we've heard today resonated with what we're seeing there, that you start with data elements and it builds from there. So I mean, if we wanted to talk about everything there, we'd be here for another 2 days. But I think it's sufficient to just highlight how the progress. But
yeah, my suggestion was simply because, you know, if we start at 8 with the population subcommittee, and, you know, it's from 8 till 10:30, that's 2.5 hours. So if we really go from 8 to 10, take a break at 10, and then at 10:30, from 10:30 to 11, we can have that discussion. I mean, at least gives us 30 minutes, because I'm sure there's a number of questions that will come up on the data palooza.
So we'll take an adaptive approach to the agenda tomorrow, starting at 8.
Perfect.
Can I just make a comment? Because, Justine, kind of what got left off was the ability to be able to discuss how the working group is going to work and how it would be converging.
Yeah,
so
right. I wasn't
would
sure
good to do it with
that's
the
on the
committee.
Work group. We were going to ask the
afternoon.
Yeah, we were going to do that in the afternoon. But you're right. It probably should be at the full committee, of, you know, what the role. So we can talk a little bit about that if we have a little extra time of how the kind of redefinition.
Everybody come assuming that there is no extra time.
Yeah, exactly. No, we start at 7:30.
We'll do a lot of things.
Yeah, how did you miss 30 minutes?
Okay, on public comments.
Dan Rohde.
Welcome.
Dan Rohde, I think the best title I can use right now is NCVHS Groupie. I've been attending these meetings since 1996, with a few exceptions. And just one comment and one suggestion. My comment is, someone who was involved in putting language together for 1104, we definitely thought this was the group that ought to do it because it was an extension of what you're already doing. And very important to have that continuity to bring another group in would then probably require a third group to do a combination between the two. So I appreciate you following through with what we hoped would be acceptable when we were playing with that information. Just a suggestion from years of sitting in on this meeting, it's always been kind of informal at the subcommittee level, that if public had comment, you kind of slid up to a microphone or somehow waved your hand and got involved in the discussion. From my recent attendance at some of the HIT committee meetings, I'd like to suggest to this committee that you consider public comment after each of your major subject issues. it's very frustrating to be following an issue and then get the comment at the end of the day when essentially the issue has either already been decided or the committee's too tired to listen to one more person. No offense. So if you are putting process together, I really would like to suggest that. I don't think it will overburden the process, but I think it would help get additional outside comments in. Likewise, while the agendas are always very well put together as far as being able to see them before the meeting, I think it would not hurt to have a note on the agenda that if you cannot attend and wish to comment, please send your comments too and give a location on that. I just think that things are changing rapidly. We can't always have everybody here, but we certainly can give them an opportunity to comment.
Thank you very much. Great suggestion. Anything else? Leslie and Linda, what do you think about 10 minutes of three for a reconvening?
Sure.
Thank you all for a productive morning. Thank you.